Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh yes, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for August 2nd, 2012. August. Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? I'm so happy you are here today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I have a great, great show planned for you today. We're going to be talking about a topic that may apply to you or someone that you love, and it has to do with the internet. We're going to be talking about internet addiction. Internet addiction. It's becoming a rather large problem in America and really worldwide. So I want to talk about internet addiction today. We're going to talk about the scope of the problem, maybe some warning signs about what to look out for, either in yourself or others. And then we'll talk about some of the things that we all can do to improve our mental health and really monitor ourselves to make sure that the time we spend online is not hurting us. So an important topic today, internet addiction on the healthy mind. Please stick around for the second half of the program if you can. Some really, really important news, some breakthrough studies in mental health. Really, you're going to want to stick around, especially in the mind-body connection that we talk about here on the Healthy Mind, and also some very, very important news in those who may be suffering with PTSD. So we'll do some headlines as well. We have, oh, it's such a good program today, so I'm really happy that you are here. Okay, the internet, how many of us now just take it for granted that it's part of our lives? I mean, if you look at the numbers of how much time we spend online, particularly the younger generations, it truly is stunning. And really, even though there was some ridicule or people were making fun of some of the early studies and scientists who looked at this in the late 1990s, people aren't laughing anymore. And what I'm talking about is this obsessive or addictive type of behavior that some people, can have when they approach the internet, the amount of time that they are spending online. And I have to tell you, it is an incredible problem these days throughout the world. But I wanted to talk about some of these statistics just so you get an idea of what the scope of the problem is. Now, let me ask you, how much time do you think that we spend, in general, in front of a computer screen? How many hours a day do you think? Eight. 8 hours a day in front of the computer screen. Now, this is more than any other activity that we do. And that includes, sadly, even sleep. And I know some of you listening are going to really be able to relate to that and say, yeah, that sounds about right. While others will sit there stunned that there is this much time being spent in front of a screen, whether it's a laptop or a computer, a tablet, or a phone. We are spending so much of our life online. Now, in and of itself, it's not necessarily a problem, but what we're starting to see is that for some people, this can really become problematic, the amount of time that people stay connected online on the internet. It can cause profound changes in their emotional health. It can even, at least in the latest studies, can show changes in the structure of the brain, literally changing the structure of the brain by spending too much time online. So we know for some people, it is a vulnerability. And that's what I want to talk about today. But first, let me give you some more statistics here. On average, how many texts do you think that we send or receive during a month? What do you think, on average? Well, in the latest data collected, on average, we will either send or receive about 400 texts a month, about 10 to 12 a day. 400 texts. Now, that might not be a whole lot, but in the last 5 years, that number has increased fourfold. Now, here's where it's scary. And parents, listen to this. On average, teens, 3,700 texts a month. 3,700. And this number as well has increased fourfold. 3,700 texts a month. It really is amazing to think about those numbers. Almost 4,000 texts a month. In addition to everything else a teen may be doing, studying, being online, using the computer, the internet, what have you. But this isn't just about teens. Across all age demographics, the amount of time we are spending online in front of our computers or our smartphones is increasing dramatically. But there's another side to this, kind of a darker side to it for some individuals. This can become very, very problematic. And their use of computers and the internet can start draining away from the satisfaction in their lives. Now, listen to these statistics. 14% of people, a little bit under that, 13.7%, find it hard to stay away from the internet for just a few days. And almost 9%, 8.7%, conceal their use from family and friends. They're embarrassed about it to the point that they won't talk to anyone about it. And almost 6% of relationships suffer because of an individual's problematic use of the internet. Now, looking at the most recent data that is out there, roughly 1 in 8 people, 1 in 8 individuals show signs of problematic use of the internet. They spend way too much time on it, and their relationships, their jobs, their academic performance begins to suffer. And the rates are increasing, not just here in America, but throughout the world. Now, the question is, how does this happen? What is it about the internet, about our phones, that can lead to so much problem for people? And that's what I want to talk about here. Why does this happen? And there have been a lot of theories back from the mid to late 90s when the internet really hit force to today. And really, when you look at it, there's a lot of just very typical similarities to other addictions. People tend to use the internet or online activity to maybe escape from problems, to get away from things. When you're online, you don't have to worry about some of your obligations, and it's a place where people can go to escape or hide, not only from their obligations, but also from themselves. We see issues with insecurity and self-esteem and sadness, in which people go to the internet to soothe themselves. But for some, it can become a big, big problem. Now, what exactly is happening to the brain when we're online? I mean, why do we find it so satisfying to the point where some people can't break away from it? It becomes a huge problem. What's going on? And it's only been in the last few years where we've really been able to understand this with a lot more certainty. But there was a recent article that I had read in a magazine, and I love the term that they used. The internet, our smartphones, It's like electronic cocaine to our brain. I think that's really appropriate. Now, what does that mean, electronic cocaine? Well, one of the chemicals in our brain, mood chemicals, is known as dopamine. And dopamine is a really feel-good chemical. And what happens is when we're online, whether it's checking our emails or being on the web, there's always a chance for something good to happen, right? We hope that we get a text from someone that we care about or that we love. We're waiting for an email that might tell us about a job opportunity or something very positive or just something funny that will make us laugh and will make us happy. And every time we find that, boom, we get a little squirt of dopamine in our brain. It makes us feel good. So we continue to do it. We get a little jolt of pleasure, and that behavior is reinforced. It might be subtly, it might be unconsciously, but that behavior is reinforced. Now, we may not always have that same kind of feeling, and all of us have been there where we have surfed for hours, we don't even know why we're doing it, and we come away from it just numb and really guilty for spending that much time online. But it's a powerful thing, that squirt of dopamine, no matter what it is that gives us pleasure online, a text, an email, a certain website. It's addicting. And I always like to make the analogy of a slot machine and its effect on you. When individuals come to see me professionally, when they're worried about their online activity and maybe how it's getting out of control. Now, in a slot machine, it's the perfected form of variable reinforcement. You keep pulling that trigger, and every once in a while, you get a small payout, or you hit the numbers on the slot machine, and you get paid a little bit, but you don't know when it's going to happen. It's variable. It doesn't come with any type of regular frequency, and that is incredibly powerful. So you keep playing, and you keep playing, and you keep playing, and some people, just like those who might have problems on the internet, can have a problem with the amount of time they spend gambling or using a slot machine. It's the same kind of principle here. We've been reinforced enough times by the good things that have happened for us on the internet that for some people, it's hard to let go of that feeling, of that possibility. And then they get into trouble, whether it is their own personal health or the health of relationships. Or often, and a lot of times what I see, is the ramifications that their use has in the workplace. And the statistics with regards to workplace use in the internet is stunning. 67% of employees in the recent studies admitted to using the internet for personal reasons during work hours. 60% of companies had disciplined their employees for inappropriate internet use. And 30% of companies had to fire their employees because of their use of the internet that didn't have to do with business activity. So it is a problem. I don't mean to be a downer about the internet. That's not what I'm here for. I use it quite a bit. But today, I just wanted to address some of the potential problems that can come about if we're not mindful about our use and when it may be getting away from us. At this point, you may be asking, well, how do I know if I have a problem or that someone I love has a problem? I mean, I'm sure there's some of you that are saying, I don't have a problem. I don't even know why he's talking about this today on the show. Now, for me, it's real. I've seen people come in that have had these types of problems. And over the years, I've just developed a set of questions that I think are a very quick and easy way to get me a good understanding of if there is a problem with an individual. And it's a mnemonic known as CAGE, C-A-G-E, four questions. And I think that this can help individuals to see if they do have a problem or someone they love has a problem. So let's review. C, cutting down. Have you ever had a problem trying to cut down your internet use? Have you tried to cut your internet use down and you weren't able to? Question 2A is angry. Have you ever gotten angry at someone because they've told you you're spending too much time on the internet or you're not present even though you're here or that you're not paying attention, or that it's caused a problem at work. Number three is guilt. Do you feel guilty with the amount of time that you're spending online or on the internet or on your phone? And finally, the fourth question, E, experience. Do you feel that your experience online is more fulfilling than your experience in real life? So, cutting down anger, guilt, and experience. If people answer yes to these questions, even if it's just a couple of them, I really begin to wonder if the individual's having a problem with their time online and on the internet, that it's really starting to dominate their life in a way that is really beginning to hurt them or take away from their satisfaction. Now, this isn't going to be the case for most people. Most people can keep those boundaries in place. But if you're finding that you're spending a ton of time, that maybe you go long into the night and then forego a lot of sleep and then have problems at work or at school or with your family or your relationship, or there have been problems in your relationships, arguments, disciplinary action at work, or you've been fired, all of this can be a really important signal. Okay, I've thought about it. I may have a problem, or I have a loved one who's suffering with this. I'm really worried. What am I to do? And it's early. It's early in understanding the role of the internet, not only in terms of what it is doing to us biologically, what it might be doing to us anatomically, literally changing the structure of our brain, and also in terms of what are the best ways to treat it. And in general, I want to give you a few tips that I think can be helpful for a lot of people if you feel like you're having a problem. Now, it's a matter of degree. If you are struggling with the amount of time you're spending online, or you feel that this is really hurting you, get help. But as I've researched this, I want to share with you some tips that some of the top centers around the country recommend for issues like this. Number one, track your time online. This comes from Texas State University, but taking the time to log your use on the internet and online and on your phone, not only when you did it, but how you were feeling. What was the reason that you had gotten online? To begin to see some patterns. How much of it is healthy and how much of it may be unhealthy? And there may be certain patterns that you begin to see. And once you get an idea of what your behavior is all about, that's when you're able to change it a bit. So track your time online. Number two, this comes from Ohio State University. Set limits. Once you've decided that you're spending too much time online, figure out ways to cut your internet use. Now, there's various ways you can do it. You can put an alarm clock on there, say, I'm going to be on for 30 minutes or an hour, or you may want to schedule some time that you don't deviate from. Tonight or every night during the week, I'm going to be on from 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock, and maybe on the weekends, I'm going to be on from noon to 4, whatever. But it's setting those limits and sticking to them. It makes you realize that you do have control. You really do have control, and that can be very reinforcing and make you feel very good about yourself. Number three, keep busy. Keep busy. Find activities that give you pleasure that don't have to do with being online or being on the phone. Rekindle those relationships. Get back in tune with the things that you like to do, a certain hobby or exercise. And incorporate that into your day. Keep busy so that the only source of pleasure that you get doesn't come from the internet or being online. And the last, block access. And this comes from Indiana University. If you're not able to control your internet use, it may be time to block access. If you've got a problem, figure out what it is that you have to do to block access. There's programs that you can install on your computer that'll prevent you from going to some of the websites that might get you in trouble or that you spend an incredible amount of time. There are certain programs that will log your activity that can be sent to a loved one or to a friend who can keep you honest about how much time you're actually spending online. Or just very simply, turn off the computer. Have a friend or a roommate or a loved one turn the computer off and help you with that. Sometimes just the act of turning off your computer, just shutting it off, helps you just kind of wake up for a moment and say, whoa, why was I spending so much time there? So there are things that can be done. Again, a review. Track your time online. Set those limits. Keep busy in other activities. And if you need to, block access. And if it really is bad, seek help. Get the help that you need. The internet is great. Don't get me wrong. I love it. Heck, I've got a website. I want you to come to it. I want people to visit it. But if it feels like it's gotten out of control, where there isn't that pleasure, or you're escaping to it, take the time to think about it, because you can make that change. I promise you, you're so much more powerful than you may believe, even if this directly applies to you. Take the time and the kindness and the compassion to help yourself, and you will get through it. You will. And that, my friends, is a wonderful step to take down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, it was a very, very important week as far as I'm concerned in health news, particularly mental health news. And I want to go to this first story because it really gets to the heart of all that I'm trying to accomplish here on The Healthy Mind. The headline, individuals with poor mental health have a decreased life expectancy. Amazing. And I've been talking about this both directly and indirectly on The Healthy Mind for a long, long time. When I talk about people needing to really address the emotional issues in their life, if they're struggling with anxiety and depression, yes, I want people to feel better. But that's only part of it. Where we're going with the science is that poor mental health, anxiety, depression, whatever it may be, can materially and directly affect our physical health and well-being. And really, this new study, it's the largest study that's been done that can clearly show a link between poor mental health and life expectancy. Now, this was a team of researchers from University College London and the University of Edinburgh. And what they did was look at the data of almost 70,000 adults aged 35 years and over. And what the researchers did was, with the individuals in this study, they were evaluated for mental health problems using various scales from zero symptoms to severe symptoms of depression and anxiety. And then they looked to see whether people who reported these symptoms during the study were more likely or not to have died over an 8-year period. And they also examined whether there was an association with death from cardiovascular disease, cancer, or an external cause of death. Okay? So they were looking to see if people have problems, first of all, how bad it was, their life expectancy, and the particular cause of death. The results showed that people who experienced symptoms of anxiety or depression had a lower life expectancy than those that didn't have any symptoms. Even people, and this was the important part, even people with minor symptoms of mental health problems seem to have a higher risk of death from several major causes, including heart problems and other forms of cardiovascular disease. Now, one of the researchers, Dr. David Batty at University College London, explained, quote, "These associations also remained after we did our best to take into account other factors such as weight, exercise, smoking, alcohol consumption, and diabetes. Therefore, this increased mortality is not simply due to people with higher levels of psychological distress having poorer health behaviors." End of quotes. Now, the recent data that's gone on in psychiatry, one of the hottest areas, has been that depression and anxiety may be associated with changes in the body biologically that increases the risk of things like heart disease. In this particular study, about a quarter of the people suffered from minor forms of anxiety and depression. Now, these people aren't typically individuals who would come to the attention of either their primary care doctor or go and seek out treatment for mental health issues. And the author stated in this study that this could have huge implications for how we even look at minor mental health problems. Now, Dr. Tom Russ, who's another researcher in the study from the University of Edinburgh, said, quote, "The fact that an increased risk of mortality was evident even at low levels of psychological distress should prompt research into whether treatment of these very common minor symptoms can reduce this increased risk of death." End of quotes. It's amazing, especially in the minor forms, because previous studies that had looked at this association between symptoms of mental health and life expectancy, they've been too low and really hadn't been as reliable. But this is a very, very large study. So we can draw some very important conclusions from all of this. So it really is important here to keep this in mind. And studies like this, and hopefully research that will be stimulated from studies like this, begin to tie together this mind-body connection. There is no separation, and our emotions can have a huge and potent effect on our physical well-being. Okay, now, this next story, very, very hopeful, particularly to those of you that might be suffering from PTSD or have had a very bad trauma where you've been struggling emotionally, particularly to those individuals in the military who have suffered wartime trauma. The headline, PTSD, a new treatment offers real hope. The problem with PTSD has always been, what is the proper treatment or the best treatment for these individuals? And there really isn't a very clear algorithm that you go by. Even today, with everything that's happened in psychiatry, PTSD sometimes can be murky on how we approach it. Oftentimes, treatment can be long-standing, a lot of medications, a lot of therapy, but we don't have a very consistent way of approaching PTSD. Well, some new research coming out of the University of South Florida suggests that this new treatment known as Accelerated Resolution Therapy, or ART, significantly reduced the symptoms associated with PTSD as early as the first session. Amazing. The researchers found that using this particular technique decreased individuals' level of depression, of anxiety, problems with sleep, and other both physical and psychological symptoms that are part of PTSD. PTSD has really become an epidemic in the United States. More than 7 million American adults and almost a third, 31% of war veterans suffer from PTSD. But what is this Accelerated Resolution Therapy, or ART? Well, it uses kind of back and forth eye movements in addition to talk therapy. So an individual will fluctuate between talking about something traumatic, that traumatic scene, and using eye movements to help the process that'll help integrate those memories from the traumatic events. And the initial study, about 80 individuals, was very, very dramatic and promising. And because it was so dramatic of an improvement, a larger study has been commissioned by the military to study this further. So you're going to be hearing quite a bit about Accelerated Resolution Therapy, ART, given these results. But if you or anyone that you love is struggling with PTSD, it may be worth your time to look into Accelerated Resolution Therapy, or ART, in the treatment of PTSD. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. shift work is linked to increased risk of heart attack and stroke. Shift work is associated with an increased risk of major vascular problems such as heart attacks and strokes, according to a new study published in the journal BMJ. The next headline. New research confirms efficacy of transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, for depression. In one of the first studies to look at TMS in the real-world clinical practice setting, researchers at Butler Hospital confirmed that TMS is an effective treatment for patients with depression who are unable to find relief through an antidepressant. And finally, the headline, the longer you're awake, the slower you get. Now, a team of researchers at Brigham and Women's Hospital have discovered that regardless of how tired you think you are or how tired you perceive yourself to be, that lack of sleep absolutely influences the way you perform certain tasks. And they're not as good as you think. Get your rest. Oh, it's so, so important. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can follow me on Twitter as well. You can follow me there at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, criticisms, anything, I want to hear from you. Don't hesitate to email me the email address peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody. And I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.